Rabbi Wagner, Bishus Rabbanim. First of all, it's the first time I've had the zechus to be an OJ. An Or Yerushalayim, I'm sorry. OJ's okay? And it's something that I delight in. Number two, it's always hard when you know what you're going to say to start and the person who introduces you says what you were going to say to start. So I am very pleased to be here also because so many of the graduates of Or Yerushalayim have gone on in so many ways, and many of them have studied at Yeshiva University. In fact, Rav Stein is now giving a reach here and will continue to, and has really distinguished himself. Rabbi Josh Blass is a Sgan Mashgiach, who's much beloved. Many of our, Josh Froelich, who's our representative here, is also a distinguished alum. Wow, very nice. I'll tell Rav Stein that you did not applaud for him. And many people in the constellation of the American Jewish community. I'm particularly close to Rabbi Yaakov Glasser, who is doing wonderful work, who's also a graduate. And I had the pleasure the other night at an honors reception to meet several of you who are either coming or considering coming to our honors program. So I thought a lot about what I should talk to you about today. And I also want to make it clearly, I'm the president of Yeshiva University. I'd love it if all of you who are appropriate and who can do it come to Yeshiva University. But like I think your Rabbeim, the goal that we all have is that you grow in Torah and that you have a meaningful and purposeful life, and different people will find their path in different ways. Right? So there's nothing about my coming here that's to make a pitch to anybody saying, are you kidding? You have to come to Yeshiva. Right? But I'm really happy also to talk to you a little bit about what I think is the vision of Yeshiva, and very happy to have a conversation with you after my remarks and to take any questions that you might have, and so on. Okay, so that was the formal pitch. Anybody who should really be here, should really come to Yeshiva University, and if not, you should come visit. We have a nice five Bate Medrash, and you can learn a little bit with us. A little bit of biography about me, just to sock away. I'm a recovering attorney. I'm a graduate of NYU Law School. I began my career in the natural progression to be president of Yeshiva University as being an assistant district attorney in New York putting people in jail. I did that in the appellate work for about 4 years. The Rabbeinu Shalom has sometimes a funny sense of humor, and he seems to have exercised it in terms of my career. I will also tell you I'm a high school graduate yeshiva student, and I did not go to Yeshiva University. I had such a miserable time at MTA that I learned to love Yahadut and to not want to be at YU. And now I'm the president. Again, the Rabbeinu Shalom. We also have, my wife and I have 6 children, 3 girls, 3 boys, all of whom are graduates of Yeshiva University. I have one son. I'm the first, in case you hadn't heard, because you live on Mars, I'm the first president of Yeshiva University who's not a musmach. I'm also the first president of Yeshiva University whose son is a musmach. So that's a yichus. If I have a choice, I'll take that choice. And he was just promoted to being the menahel of the high school at the Mizrahi School in Cleveland. So 3 of my 6 are in chinuch. The other one is a senior at Stern College. The other is a Maccabeet. That seems to be a career. You know what the Maccabeets are? Maccabeets are the Jewish a cappella group of Yeshiva College, who made a video that went viral, and it turns out to be a significant Kiddush Hashem in America, because you get all kinds of letters from people who are uncertain of who they are, who say that for the first time they feel pride in being a Jew. We've had several people ask us to refer them to local day schools because they want their kids to go to yeshiva. So it was a nice thing. But he also works, and he's a graduate of yeshiva. I have another son who's in a clinical psychology program at our graduate school, all graduates of yeshiva. My eldest child teaches at the Westchester Hebrew High School. My daughter and my second daughter teaches first grade at Yeshivas Noam. So there's my that's the real yichus. The most of my yichus comes from the fact that I'm married to my best friend for 38 years, Kenayin Hara. That her father was a graduate of Yeshiva University, and my life take strange turns. From being an assistant district attorney, this is why when people want to talk to you about career planning, you should listen very well and then realize that siyata d'shmaya is the best career planning. Not that you shouldn't think about the future, and not that you shouldn't plan. Right, but the Ribbono Shel Olam has his plans for you, and you should plan very carefully, and then also allow Hashem to help. I left the district attorney's office to become a professor of law at Yeshiva University's law school, which is Cardozo Law School, and I was the associate dean. I taught legal ethics to prove that I had a sense of humor, and spent about 8 years doing that. I was about to join a corporate law firm in New York, and my wife was very unhappy because she felt that I needed to be in public life and I wouldn't be happy practicing law. Out of the blue, I was recruited to be the president of an organization called Hillel, which has programs on all the major American college campuses except Yeshiva University of Jewish identity and the like. I had no idea what I was doing, and I said, "Where's Hillel based?" They said, "Washington." I said, "I love Washington. We're not moving the family to Washington. Thanks very much." I went home. I told my wife. She said, "You're going for an interview." So literally, she forced me to go for an interview. I had no interest in the job, and that's usually when it backfires on you, and they offered me the job. I was very, I said no. My wife said yes. We moved to Washington. We spent 15 years there. It was a wonderful opportunity to work for Klal Yisrael, and I hope be a good example to them of Frumkeit. In the 15 years that I would travel around the world, I never, even in the winter, I never wore a hat when I traveled, because I wanted people to see someone in a position of Jewish responsibility who wore a yarmulke and was frum. It was a wonderful experience. I didn't know what I was going to do when I grow up. I still don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up. And the only thing I knew absolutely was that I'd never be president of Yeshiva University, being neither a gaon nor a rav. Then I was recruited. I said no. A few years passed. They came back, and the job was pretty much offered to me. We had sent three of our children to YU already. I had certain senses of where YU had to go further in terms of developing a greater sense of warmkeit, a greater sense of warmth, more integration, a sense of direction in terms of saying that we all have an achrayas to each other and to the world. Again, my wife said yes. I didn't say no this time. We moved to New York 8.5 years ago, and I've had the great zechus of being the president of the university and the president of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. So I say that to you not to, just to give you a context, and to also say that the opportunities to serve and to be involved with Klal Yisrael are often very surprising, and you can't predict them. I also do it to say that I'm very mindful of the fact that I'm not a rav, and I'm not here to give you a shir. Right? That's, Baruch Hashem, I learn every day, and I have a chavrus in the Beis Medrash, but I think I'm a real good Jewish balabas, but I'm not a great Talmud Chacham. So I want to share words of Torah with you, but certainly doing it with the anivus of knowing that I'm a lay person, or sharing those perspectives in the context of Yeshiva University and in the context of your future. Okay, fair enough? So, if you'll permit me then, it's impossible to talk, to be here this time of year and not talk about Sefer Shmos and not talk about the journey of the Jewish people and what it means for us, and what it means for us individually, and what it means for us collectively. You know that the Netziv in his introduction to Sefer Shmos brings the Bahag, who says that the name of the second Sefer is not Sefer Shmos, but it's Sefer Sheni. That it's the only one of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah that doesn't have its own name, but it's called Sefer Sheni. And it's because the Bahag says that it's a continuation of the story of the creation of the world, and that Sefer Bereishis is incomplete without Sefer Shmos. That Sefer Bereishis is the story of individuals, Sefer Shmos is the story of a people. And you know that in Sefer Shmos from Brias HaOlam we get into the development of people who are our avot and imahot, and the development of our family, right? And then with Sefer Shmos, ve'elu Shmos, b'nei Yisrael. First that we are b'nei Yisrael and we become a people. And Shmos is the story of our going from Golus to Geula, the beginning of a process that continues till today. So according to the Netziv, the Shmos complements and completes Bereishis. Bereishis tends to be the story of individuals. Shmos is a story of us as a people. Also interesting that the mitzvot of Bereishit are aimed at individuals, the mitzvah of Gidanasha, the mitzvah of Mila. Right? The first mitzvah in Shmos is a communal mitzvah. Right? It's Kiddush HaChodesh. It's the first time we're given a mitzvah for us as a people and what we have to do is that. And you know, in a way of looking at it, so in Bereishis we learn about the midos of the avos and the desires and the journeys of the avos. In Shmos, how do we make that happen to us as a people? How do we go forward with that? It's also interesting to know that there are no dreams, there are no chalamos in Sefer Shmos. Right? In Sefer Bereishis there are lots. Yaakov dreams, Yosef dreams, Paro dreams. Right? In Shmos, no dreams. No dreams. Okay, now that we become a people, we don't dream, we do. We try to bring the dreams alive. I was once with my son Noam, who's now in a psychology program, and he told me he was learning at another small yeshiva called Shalavim, and he told me that he heard someone say something he thought I'd appreciate. I said, what's that? He said, well, someone said to me that the only way to make a dream come true is to wake up. The only way to make a dream come true is to wake up. And that's why in Sefer Shmos we're awake. It's the process of the awakening of the journey of Klal Yisrael and of Bnei Yisrael. So Shmos is how we awaken, from Golus to Geula, from being slaves to be free. It's easy to say that Shmos is going from slave to freedom, but I want to add something else. It's not just freedom. It's the freedom to commit to responsibility. There was once a popular American song written by a writer named Kris Kristofferson, who your parents would remember. And the line in the song that was the refrain was, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Right? The truth is, when we crossed Yam Suf, we were free, but we're in a midbar. We're in a midbar. You can be stranded on a desert island, and you're free, but are you really free? You can be in the midst of a career or working or being tremendously materialistic and going after money, and are you really free or are you enslaved to money? So what does it mean to be free? What's the whole lesson of Sefer Shmos to be free? Seems to me that it's to give you the gift of responsibility. I mean, I can't find a word in the Torah for rights. I mean, in America we tend to dwell on rights more than anything else. Okay, zechuyot is not a word that you find in the Torah. If you want to know what the operative word of the Torah is, it's mitzvah, tchiyuv. We are a people of responsibilities. We are a people who view responsibilities not as a burden, but as a gift. Right? So the journey from Golus to Geula is the journey from slavery to freedom, and the freedom to commit to something. And I think that shows itself throughout Sefer Shmos, and let me just try to give you a few examples of that. I love the story of the growth of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Rabbeinu family, and what he tries to do. So you know that he grows up as Ish Mitzri, right? The day comes, he goes out of the palace to visit his brothers, so he knows that he has a people who are his brothers. Right? And he goes and he sees a Mitzri who is smiting an Ivri. I like telling this because I like using the word smite, and there's no other way to use smite. And the Pasuk says, Vayifen ko vacho vayar ki enish. Right? So Moshe sees this, and it says, Vayifen ko vacho, he looks, he turns hither and yon. I also like it because it's the only time I can say hither and yon. He looks here and he looks there, vayar ki enish, and he sees that there's no person, vayachas amitri, and he smites the Egyptian. That's, it's a very interesting thing, but what does it mean, vayifen ko vacho vayar ki enish? The Mepharshim say different things. L'chora, the obvious one is he sees this, and he says, oh my gosh, will anybody see? I'm Prince of Egypt. Will anybody see what I do if I intervene here? And he looks here and he looks there and he doesn't see anybody watching, so he does the deed. Okay, one way of looking. Another is he looks and he says, this is a terrible thing. Someone ought to do something. Vayifan ko vacho, and he looks here and there to say somebody ought to get involved. Vayar ki einish, he sees there's no one there. He's learned Pirkei Avos. He knows Bimkom She'enan Hashem Ishtadel Liyot Ish. Right? So he says, okay, I have to act, and he acts. There's another way to look at it also, which is that this is a kind of cathartic moment for Moshe. Moshe is the prince of Egypt. He's also part of the slave people. He sees this injustice being done, and he looks and he says, Vayifen kol v'cho. He looks into himself. He looks here and he looks there. Vayar ki einish. And he says, who am I? Who am I? And he says, okay, I know who I am. I have to act. And he acts. There are those who get drushy and say what it really means is when it says Vayachas HaMitzri, that Moshe really killed the Mitzri within him. Okay? But in any event, this is Moshe saying, I have a sense of responsibility. I have to act. I have to matter. By the way, he then does it the next day when there's a dispute between two Jews. So first thing, he protects the Jew from the Mitzri. Secondly, he wants to intervene Jew and Jew. Then he leaves Mitzrayim. He goes to Midian. And the third occurrence, when there's a dispute between two Goyim, right? And he decides that he's going to intervene there. What defines Moshe as a sense of what's the responsibility I should be taking to life, and he demonstrates it in all those different ways. I also think when we go to the first mitzvah that we're given, Kiddush HaChodesh, it's also a great mitzvah for us in terms of who we are and what we do. Ultimately, what's Kiddush HaChodesh? It's the demand, it's the command that we have the obligation and the opportunity to be Mekadesh the whole. If you want to know what I think Yeshiva University stands for, it's to say whether you're going to be Klei Kodesh or whether you're going to be what I call Lei Kodesh, you have to be Kodesh. And Rav Shimon Shkopf, who was a Zatzal, was a great Talmud Chacham, and he spent a year or two at YU in the 20s. And he wrote a piece where he was defining Kedoshim to you and what it means to say Kedoshim to you. It's not holy, according to him. Holy is like an otherworldly term. And he talked about Kedusha being nobility. What is nobility? It's a metati odei. It's mahu afata. It's how do we emulate the Rabbanu Shel Olam in how we behave. So it seems to me that the lesson that we all learn and what yeshiva is dedicated to and this yeshiva is dedicated to is how do you develop a consciousness and an approach to life where you realize that the ultimate gift that we have is to be mekadesh tachol through our learning, through our asiyat mitzvot, through all that we do, right? If we kind of sprinkle the magic dust of Torah, right, on our lives, we take what's ordinary, we make it special. We take a drink of water, we make a shahar kol, we bring the awareness that this isn't just water, it's a gift from the Rabbanu Shel Olam, and we have to savor it. We make ourselves sacredly self-conscious, right? So Kiddush HaChodesh is the first time the Rabbanu Shel Olam commands the people, and by the way, it's both Moshe and Aaron who he gives this mitzvah to say that it's everybody, it's not just the leader, it's not just the Kohen, it's everybody, and it's saying, be Mekadesh Zman. Now, it's also interesting because slaves are owned by time. Slaves have no control over time, right? One of the notions of being a free person is that you own time, and the question is, what do you do with time? So right away, before Bnei Israel even leaves Mitzrayim, we said, you know what? You're about to own time. What do you do with it? You have to be Mekadesh. So it's interesting. We have a Shabbos. How do we know that Shabbos is Kodesh? Who makes Shabbos Kodesh? Rabbanu Shel Olam makes Shabbos Kodesh. Every seventh day is Shabbos. Who makes Yontif? We do. We do through that first mitzvah. We decide when Rosh Chodesh is. 15 days later is Yontif. It's in our hands to be Mekadesh, the chol, and in that way be a shutuf with the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And that awareness starts right at the beginning, and it's the lesson that the whole story from Galus to Geula is telling us. And I have to tell you, it's a story that we still haven't learned well enough. It's a story that we still have to remind ourselves about. It's a way we have to tell ourselves that our lives can have incredible meaning if we ask ourselves what really matters. In some ways, it's easy to have that when we're sitting and learning in yeshiva. As we go out into life, if we don't take the yeshiva with us, it's easy to forget it. So the question that we always end up asking is what matters in life and what do we do with what matters? But I think that's what this story teaches us. I'll share one more story because it's another way that I like talking about. Bnei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim, right? They approach Yam Suf. Any of you in a previous life saw the movie about this called The Ten Commandments? Anybody? Okay, thank you very much. I wasn't going to ask you about Prince of Egypt, okay, because I'm old enough to do The Ten Commandments. So it's a great Cecil B. DeMille epic, The Ten Commandments. The screenplay for that epic is called The Torah. The Ten Commandments was starring Charlton Heston as Moshe Rabbeinu, Yul Brynner as Pharaoh, and in the movie, and the great story, Bnei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim, they go into the desert, and they come to Yam Suf, and they hear Yul Brynner on a chariot with 1,000 extras on chariots coming toward them. The sea is in front of them. They turn to Charlton Heston and Bnei Yisrael do what they keep doing. They kvetch. They say, why'd you take us out of Egypt? We're going to die here. You got Yul Brynner behind us and the sea is in front of us. What's going to happen? Charlton Heston looks and says, fear not. Stand aside and see the glory of God. Charlton Heston spoke that way. The rough translation of Hashem Yilachem Lachem. That God's going to take care of it. Don't worry. He then turns to God, and we'll go back to the screenplay, and the Rabbanu Shel Olam, in one of the great double takes of history, turns to Moshe Rabbeinu, who says, God's going to fight for you, and what does he say? He says, Matitzak Alai, loosely translated. What do you want for my life? You think you schlepped them out of Egypt, and now they're complaining, and you look at me? And the Medrash tells us that at that moment, Nachshon ben Aminadav got it, understood, right, and jumped into the sea. As he jumped into Yam Suf, the Ribbono Shel Olam parted the sea. By the way, in English literature, what Nachshon did was called, anybody know? It's a leap of faith. That's where you get the expression, a leap of faith. He took a leap of faith. But what's the message there? The message is the beginning of the story of you're not, to be free doesn't mean that you're going to let God schlep you along. It means that you're going to take responsibility, that you have bitachon, that you know that Hashem will be your partner, but that you have to act. That you have to act. That you take that leap of faith, you take responsibility for your lives, and that's the story that continues. We go from there to Har Sinai, where we receive the Torah, right? The work that tells us how to live a life of being Mekadesh Chol, how to take on responsibility, and frankly, we spend the next 38 years after that. Right, or 40 years after that, right, in training to figure out, you know, there's an expression that says it's one thing to take the Jews out of Egypt, it was harder to take Egypt out of the Jews. Right, so I spend the next 40 years in training to say, how do you live by Torah? How do you live by taking responsibility so that you're prepared to go to Arzenu HaKadosha and live a life in a covenantal relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, where the deal is that we get to be Mamlechas Kolanim V'Gai Kadosh if we walk in God's ways, and we get to be an Orla Goyim. And in that way, what we are models God's values to the world, and hopefully we move forward and we advance civilization. So I also, during my growth years, one of the things that I got involved in was kind of youth work, but not formally NCSY, but NCSY-like work through YU while I was in college. And I have to, I play the accordion. It's coming back. So as a teenager and young 20s person, I would be at Shabbatonim and I would do kumzitzes, and I developed the need to have some stories to tell. So I have about 15 stories in my pocket. When I finish telling those 15 stories, I have to get another job and go to another place because I don't have any more stories. But one of my favorites, if I can share with you, I think has some shaifas as well. It's a story that says that in the beginning of all time, the Ribbono Shel Olam created all kinds of creatures. One of Hashem's creations was not happy with the Ribbono Shel Olam's handiwork. It was a little animal with a round furry body, with two spindly legs, with no teeth. And this creature looked around at the world and cried up to the Ribbono Shel Olam and said, Hashem, why did you create me in a world of the predator where I will surely die. I can't manage in this world. Look what you've done. You gave the lion great strength. You gave the elephant great bulk. A porcupine has its quills. A fox can be smart. A gazelle is swift. And look at me. I won't be able to survive. Why did you create me? Ribbono Shel Olam says, my creature, sleep now. Tomorrow it will be different. So the creature found a little cleft in a rock and shivered through a fitful night's sleep, awoke in the morning, took a few steps, and let out a groan because it found that now it also had two lumps on its back. So again, calls out to the Ribbono Shel Olam and again says, Hashem, I told you I couldn't manage. I told you I couldn't survive in this world. You said you'd make it better, and look what you've done. You've burdened me still further with these two clumsy lumps on my back. And the Ribbono Shel Olam Kaveyochel smiled on his creature and turned and said, foolish bird, you have wings. You can fly. You have wings, you can fly. So we have the wings of Torah. We have the wings of our Masorah. We have the wings of our peoplehood. We have the wings of responsibility. How do we fly? How do we fly? So I think it's simple. We do it by building lives that matter. Lives of meaning based on Torah, playing to our strengths, deciding which direction we want to go, that we can best partner with Ribbono Shel Olam and build lives that matter. In what we've read, when Moshe sees the sneh and he approaches the sneh, so the Ribbono Shel Olam says to him, "Sha'al nalecha me'al raglecha, take off your shoes from your feet, because this is Admas Kodesh." So the Kalever Rebbe, which somebody told me about, and of course I was in another yeshiva, and they said, which Kalever Rebbe, the first or the second? And I sent them on an assignment to find out, because I have no idea, so you don't have to ask me that question. But the Kalever Rebbe said that Sha'al Nalecha, remove your shoes, means remove your shackles. Remove your shackles. Moshe is told to say, when you see the nace of a sneh, with a fire burning in it, and you realize that what it means is that life is not just everything you see, but that you have the capacity, right, to go chutz min ha-teva, if you're going b'derech Hashem. So take off the shackles. Take off the shackles that keep you locked, right? Feel the ground between your toes, right? And do something, and matter, and you can do that. So the question is, what's next? It's time, I think, to take responsibility and keep growing. And I'm sure you'll be fine wherever you go. To me, look, Yeshiva University has 7,000 students, 5,000 employees, 3,000 undergraduate students, has an annual budget of about $540 million, about 320 of that is a medical school and medical research at Einstein. We have to raise $81 million a year. I haven't come there to raise money. In fact, I was there with a huge endowment. Then 2008 came, and now we have a small endowment. There's a joke called that somebody comes and says, "Do you know how to make a small fortune?" They say, "No, how?" They say, "Start with a large fortune." So I am mekayem that story. And there's lots of pressure. There's lots of pressure. If you ask me though, what the ikar of the job is, right? It's to say, what's Yeshiva University? And it's not Yeshiva University. It's Yeshiva University. The Rishon Lezion, Rav Amar, visited us a year and a half ago. And when he walked in, some of his gabayim weren't happy about his coming to YU. He wanted to come to YU. He sat down with me and with Rav Schechter and with Rav Harlap, Rabbi Reis, who's the Menahel of the Yeshiva. And he then turned to me and he said, "How many of your students are Shomei Mitzvot?" I said, "Kulam." He said, "Ekzei yecholiot ha'im zeh lo kama Bar Ilan." Right? So I said, "No, there's a big difference. Bar Ilan is a university that has a yeshiva in it. This is a yeshiva with a university around it." And it's true, that's the purpose. I must tell you, there are 350 universities in the United States. Right? If it had 349, it could survive. There's one yeshiva university. There's one place that defines itself as a yeshiva that believes, and people can disagree and not disagree, believes that you can and should live a life with Torah as the ikar, but also from there, based on the, you know, looking through the lens of Torah, embrace the other wisdoms that the Ribbono Shel Olam has created. and learn how to use them lahagdil Torah lahadira, and how to go into the world and build lives of meaning and purpose, and to matter in the world, whatever that is, whether it's as a Rosh Yeshiva, or whether it's as a psychiatrist, or whether it's as a business person, or whether it's as a lawyer, or whether it's as a Rav or a Mechanech, as long as you matter. But when I'm thinking about my $540 million budget, and how you deal with the fact that we're going to be $25 million in the red, and we have to reduce our budget. So you look at the same issues of freedom, meaning taking responsibility, right? And whether you're doing it for yourself, and whether you're doing it from need or prospectively, it seems to me there's a simple management technique for your life. The first question is to say, what matters? What really matters to me? And once you say what really matters to you, you say, okay, if I now make a list, what matters? Okay, this is what matters. What choices do you make? You're not slaves. What choices do you make to make what matters happen? And you're now at the point in your lives where you're starting to ask those questions. And there are lots of different paths you can take to be mekayem that. Okay, I wanted to share with you that first of all, several of you, please God, will be joining us at Yeshiva, so I get to work for you. Others who will not should also know what YU is and know that it's there for you. So you should know that it's a place where the centrality of the of Yeshiva is Yeshiva. Okay? And that there's learning that's uncompromised, and I think it's one of the great yeshivot. I know that it's one of the great yeshivot of the world. Even some of our Rabbeim who have not learned at our Yerushalayim are fairly significant. And it's a wonderful place. You should also know it's a place where the academics are not just Yotzer Zayin, but serious academics. But there are serious ways that you need to learn, I think, to know about the world, to know about different disciplines, also so that can you can bring that to bear on your learning as well, but also so that you can build an integrated life based on Torah. The life at Yeshiva of public service opportunities, and in fact Rav Schechter is here right now with a group of I think 20 guys on a tzedek mission where they have to do tzedek work every day. He gives shiurim to them every day on what it means. Today I'm in Or Yerushalayim. They are in the Ramla prison, where they're learning about the justice system, and they're going to talk to some prisoners about that. They're then going to be in Bet Shemesh and talk about Inyanei Diyoma. And issues like that, they're spending much of their time actually doing hands-on tzedek experiences. And I think that's part of the splendor of a place that's like Yeshiva. It prepares you for what's next. We have the highest rates of Ivy League rates of admission to graduate professional school or job placement. And to the degree that that matters to you, it's really important. But wherever you're going to go, go to a place where you get to have friends who make you better than you are. Where you have a chevra that strengthens your strengths and fortifies you against your yetzahara. That clearly the next years of your life will be defined in part by who your rabbeim are and by who your friends are, who your significant friends are. That's what makes a difference. Make sure you put yourself there. Make sure you decide what's not negotiable. This is my life. These are my values. These are critical. It helps to matter. And yes, by the way, and yeshiva, you know, I would say that first of all, yeshiva is affordable. Okay, we work with everybody to make it doable. It's not free, but something that's free usually is worth what you pay for it. But we all get through it, and we all can get through it, and we're very aggressive in working with you on how you can do that. But wherever you go, realize the opportunity we have that was given to us by the Rabbanu Shalom through Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, that we're a covenantal people, that we've been given a responsibility to show the world what it means to live in the Derech Hashem, and that's very important. So I'll end with one of my other 15 stories. I can only come back here five more times, and I'll use all my stories. But this is a child story, but I think it has meaning. The story is told of a parent who walks into their dining room, and they see their young child, and the child is sitting at the dining room table with papers spread out, with crayons and magic markers and pencils and pens, busily scribbling away. The parent looks at the child and says, "What are you doing?" Child looks at the parent and says, "Me? I'm drawing a picture of God." The parent looks at the child, smiles, and says, "My child, don't you know, no one knows what God looks like. kid looks up at the parent, smiles back and says, well, they'll know when I'm finished. In so many ways, right, our life is about how you paint the picture of the Ribbono Shel Olam on the world. Right? How you get to do that? And your yeshivas and your schools, right, can give you the canvas and they can give you the paints and they can give you the palette. You get to write it. It's a wonderful, as a parent of six, and now as a grandparent of 3.5, it's a great inspiration for me to see you and to see how you're going to take on the world and how you're going to make sure that my children have other wonderful Jewish children to play with as they grow old, and that my grandchildren will inherit a Jewish world of meaning and purpose. So I thank you for allowing me to speak to you today, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much. Can I make it safe for you, just for about 5 minutes or so, for us to have a conversation? Any questions you have? I really want to make it safe. Anything you want to say, don't be embarrassed, and feel free to ask anything you'd like, or make a statement, or make a small donation. Yes, sir. Tell me your name.
Shalom.
I don't work for Lenders. First of all, you know, I honor the memory of Dr. Lander, who was to some degree a mentor. So you will not have me say anything negative. It's a different philosophy at Lander's. It's a fine philosophy, but it's a different philosophy. Dr. Lander would tell me, he says, you know, you're about Torah Umada, we're about Torah Parnassa. He says that for us, the purpose of secular education is to make sure that you have the training, that you can get into graduate and professional schools if you choose, and that you can have a serious learning experience. Lander's, by the way, you have to make your choices. Lander's is a much smaller school. For some students, that's better, because it's a smaller place. Yeshiva is a significantly larger institution, a significantly larger base medrash and batei medrash, different paths. As a university or as an academic institution, there's not a comparison. I mean, Yeshiva University is a major academic institution. It's a major research university, and even on an undergraduate level, it has full-time research faculty whose jobs in many departments, I mean, it's a larger school, are to work with students and to do research and to publish, and that's a much more a national university focus than Lander's is. Lander's is wonderful teachers and professors, right, who will work for you in a more narrow curriculum. Right? But students go from Lander's on to graduate schools. I'm sure that because it's yeshiva, I mean, I won't compare our acceptance rates to Lander's, but I'll tell you that if you're a serious student and you go to YU and you want to go to a law school or a medical school or a graduate program or a business opportunity, right, the kind of reception that you get coming from yeshiva, the number of our students who get into, you know, the top graduate and professional schools is comparable to Ivy League schools. Lander has a different approach. How is that? Okay. Other questions? But thank you for the question. Other questions? Yes, sir. Who are you? Who are you?
Akiva Gordo.
Hi, Akiva.
What do you think about Queens as opposed to YU? There's a big price difference.
Go to Lander's if that's your choice. I mean, I don't know the yeshiva. I don't know the base medrash of Queens. Duh. Right? I don't know why you'd say, you know, you're going to go from a yeshiva like this and you're going to go to a school where, first of all, you know, I think it has the unfortunate parts of college experience in terms of anything being okay. But it's also a commuter school, so you'll come in for your classes and you'll go. I think there is something to spending years in a university setting, but in a university setting where Torah is the main thing. And I think if you're looking for a school, so Queens is City University, there are fine faculty there. Okay, the average class size at Yeshiva College is 12.5. I don't want to tell you about that 0.5 kid, but at Queens, I can't tell you how much it is. At Yeshiva University, you'll have teachers and faculty that you'll know, and I'll say, who could write you a graduate recommendation, but much more important than that, who you'll have a relationship with. Okay, that doesn't happen at Queens. It's a different place. Right? I don't understand. You know, if you're saying it's because of money, yeah, it's cheap. It doesn't make sense. These are important years of your lives. right? Your parents have invested in you mightily in sending you here, in sending you to yeshiva before that. What makes the ripe age of 18 or 19? The age when it's done now, right? You need to take college-level political science, but you don't need to take college-level Torah. I don't get it. And I know the guys who go to Queens, it's fine, I'm going to go to Queens and I'm going to learn at. And then let's talk about how many of them continue to learn at. Okay? I'll also make the point that, at least from my perspective, there is a benefit of being in one environment where you learn Torah and you also learn the academics. Right? And there's the integration of the two, or the attempt at the integration of the two, because that's always a challenge, and it'll always be a challenge in life for you. So just remember, I just made a pitch for Landers, if you're... Yes, sir. You are?
Hi.
Hi.
We met.
Did we meet the other night? No? Okay. I said, go ahead.
No, you said that fortifying environment in terms of your family and friends is paramount importance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you'll find that admittedly that at YU there's a tremendous diversity in both backgrounds and in current level of Shneiros Mitzvos. Like, how does that play into
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how much of a tremendous difference there is. I mean, remember that we're talking. It's easy to be in a unified place and to think that everything else is a tremendous difference. You're talking about 3,000 men and women, all of whom, right, consider themselves Shomer Shabbos. 90% of whom have had yeshiva experience. 85% of whom spent at least a year in Israel. We talk about the diversity. I'm not sure. You know, you're not talking about the Greater Klal Yisrael. You're not going to Madison Square Garden for a Knicks game and say a lot of these people are Jews, right? So I mean, it's people who are that. Yes, there are some who have stronger backgrounds. There are some who want to be in the Beis Medrash Steiging, and there are some who want to concentrate more on other Judaic studies. If there's anybody who doesn't want to have Limudei Kodesh, it makes absolutely no sense for them to be at YU. Because it's a much harder day than it is at any other college. Right? So, do I think I have students who are searching, or who don't know that they're searching, or who park themselves at YU? Do I think that as people grow, they go in different ways? I think that's right. I'm proud of that, frankly, because I think you need to be in an environment, but I don't think that means you shut out everybody else. And if somebody comes to me and says, you know, I saw a kid and I don't know that he's from, so my answer is, so have you gone up to him? Have you had a conversation with him? Have you invited him to sit and learn with you? Because if they're already at yeshiva, they're at yeshiva for a reason. Okay, and by the way, to me, it's not, when I say you need to be in an environment where you can define who your closest friends are and who your most important influences are, that doesn't mean you have to be in an environment where there's nobody else, right? It's to make sure, I mean, there are many different chavras. I mean, they range as wildly as people from OJ and people from Shalavim. We even have a few people from Eretz Hatzvi. I understand what you're saying, but I'm taking it the other way. It's an environment, the YU environment is not an environment that's going to say, here's somebody who's from, we're going to make him less from. Yes, you have responsibility, right? And no matter where you go, because I'm sure if you go to Queens College, right, you're absolutely going to be in a wonderful environment. Okay, you know, if you're in Lander, you'll also have people who have different ways, but it's a narrower group, and call a kavod, right? So there is a difference there. I don't think you put yourself at risk by being at YU. I think you're in a big environment, but you also are in a place where there are different drachim within halacha and within Torah. You know, every one of my ramim is called a Rosh Yeshiva. Right, and although Dr. Lam Zolzayn Gesunden Stark has the title of Rosh HaYeshiva, right, and ultimately he will, when there's a halakhic question, generally he will refer me either to Rav Schachter or to someone else, right? To us, one of the strengths is that there are 25 Rosh HaYeshiva who talk to each other, who don't have bitter fights, who have somewhat different worldviews, but admittedly, all but two have bachelor's degrees, 60% of them have master's degrees, and 20% of them have PhDs. Of the two who don't have bachelor's degrees, one is Rav Yankelevich Zolzayn Gesunden Stark. He's 102 years old, and he got his undergraduate work at Rodden. And the other is Rav Eli Baruch Shulman, who spent 150 years, he's a young man, but he spent 150 years at Lakewood, but is an autodidact, and any book that I've read, he's read and can quote me from in ways that I can't. And the rest of them are, so that certainly contributes to the flavor as well. But it's a very serious yeshiva. And when I have the zechus of being there for a Shabbos or for Slichos or for, it's a wonderful, wonderful environment. There's also a place called Stern College, by the way, which is also in a wonderful environment, but I don't think it's shayach to any of you. It might be shayach to some of you, but I mean not as a place to go. Any other? It's very forthcoming, but is there anything else? Yes, sir. Who are you?
Zach.
Hi, Zach.
What's the percentage of secular teachers that are Jewish or not Jewish?
Oh, I don't know. I'll tell you this, that since I came, and I can't speak from before I came, if we hire a faculty member to teach on an undergraduate level, they have to have a conversation either with the dean, the provost, or me, where we talk about the purposes of Yeshiva University, and if someone isn't either of that hashkafa or respectful and sympathetic to it, they don't get hired. Okay. I think we have in the faculty we have a significant number of Shomer Shabbos people because that's the excitement of it. I think we have a number of people who are not from and a number of people who are not Jewish. Frankly, some of the people who are not Jewish are the strongest boosters of what the purpose of YU is because it's a very elevating experience to teach from guys. It really is. But by the way, I think. You hear the horror stories when somebody teaches something, is it inappropriate, is not. We believe in Yesh Gvul, right? And we try to work with people. Sometimes we'll have an adjunct faculty member who won't be properly sensitized, and there'll be something that the students are asked to do that's inappropriate. That generally doesn't happen, though. It generally doesn't. And when it happens, we stop. Anything? I'd know if you're scratching your head if you want to ask a question. All right, gentlemen, it's a great pleasure. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for allowing me to take your time.